And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got more open lines for you. Tommy's going to take your text and tweets, and we'll get right into the calls when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Again, we want to say our thanks to the many first responders, police, fire, EMTs, security folks, truck drivers, everybody who's on the front lines, hospital employees, all of you who are on the front lines of this situation that we've been in now for several months. And we pray that it shall go away. As the weather gets a little warmer, I think it probably will start to dwindle down. And people build up their antibodies in their own system. I mean, as we've had so many guests on over the past few weeks, the body's a marvelous machine, and it will develop antibodies if you give it a chance. And that's one of the reasons why I propose we open up and not keep locking down. We got to give ourselves a chance to build up our immunities. But let's go to the phones. Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina, to get us started. Hello, Ed.
Hey, George.
How you doing?
Good to talk to you. You need to add something besides your TV and this show. You're not busy enough. Oh, you do such a great job, and you've always, and the staff too, and the guests are just incredible.
They're the best.
I was going to just mention this thing about Montauk. I'm getting up in age. I might have been the only person alive today that was at this meeting. I'm thinking it was in the 70s, and I drove over 100 miles to go to a meeting. These two guys had been up to Montauk, and they had talked to the Army and all this. They said, oh, there's nothing there. It's not active, blah, 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 blah. And so they kind of broke in the fence and went up there and took a bunch of pictures and all they showed us. And out on the very end was a thing kind of like a control tower in the old days for air, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because on the end of Montauk, apparently, they had, like, northeasters would get up to almost hurricane 90 miles an hour. And,
jeez.
And then, you know, they had a sign over in the bushes said Camp Arrowhead. And they had a lot of pictures of stuff they took like that. And it was supposed to be not in use. And then they found this giant cable, electric cable, big thing going along the ground. And it went underground from Con Ed. Now, the people up in Montauk in the town there were real upset because a lot of children went missing. And, of course, you know, back then they were thinking, what's going on with our children? You know, and then you've had a guest, and I think maybe Jimmy Church had a guest, and I was kind of amazed because they were talking about UFO stuff, and out of the blue you brought up time travel or something, or they did. And, and they said, oh, that was in Montauk back in the 70s or whatever. And I was grabbing the phone because I said, I'll see if they know what they're talking about. I'm going to ask him if he knows about the kids. Before I could even dial the number, he said, yeah, they used children because their minds were more able to handle the time travel.
Wow.
And then he said, and the children are getting together now much older, and they're writing a book. Now, that ought to be a heck of a book.
What a great story.
You ought to be able to get some of those people. In addition, they had a picture for some reason of the guy that was the Manhattan Project leader from Princeton, I think, invented the computer or something. And the government wanted us to think he was dead, and they showed him in a hospital and so forth. And then they showed another picture. Now, I had a lot of chronic health problems. I had there's three kinds of polio, and I had the deadly form, basically.
How old were you when you had that, Ed?
I was a young child, like 5.
Okay. Did they put you in an iron lung?
No, I didn't have that. There's three kinds. There's the kind that you get three vaccines when you get a polio shot. You get the kind that attacks the nerves in the arms and legs, and the nerves die, and you can't walk or, you know, wheelchair or braces, and then you had an iron lung. There are two people still alive in an iron lung when I checked a few years ago. That's where the breathing is paralyzed, and one lady's 83 and a guy in Dallas. And I had the bulbar polio that goes up in through the throat into the myelin sheath and the spine to the brain, and it's deadly. And I'm assuming I'm the only one that's been alive a long time. I take some alternative health stuff.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
But anyway, so I got into trying to heal myself, you know, and stuff. And so I got into macrobiotics and all. And so because of that, I learned how you can read faces, and so they were pointing out They said, the government said this guy's dead, but look at this. And they pointed something out that is so easy to see, and it's amazing if you aren't, if you don't train yourself, you cannot, you know, you won't see it. I mean, like, I can go, you can line 100 women up, I can go down and shake their hands and say hi to them and look them in the face, and you can put none, one, or 50 in there that have had twins, and I'll look at them for 2 seconds on their face, and I can pull them right out of line. And
you'll know.
Anatomologists can do that.
Huh.
So anyway, they showed his picture, too. And then the last thing, you had somebody recently talking about a ship that people were coming back in the ship. I missed the first part of that. It was recent. You remember the guy that was talking about something about some of the sailors were in the ship and they had to cut their arm off? And
that was Al Bielek. That was a tape that we
Oh,
heard.
That was Bielek. Oh, okay. Yeah. Because he was the...
He was the guy. He and his brother, Duncan Cameron.
Yeah, and he's the one that was in the Chesapeake Bay where Tesla, what was that called? They were making a ship disappear, and that also...
That was the Philadelphia experiment.
Philadelphia, yeah, because Tesla backed away from that because he didn't feel they were doing the math right, and sure enough, some of them came back in the ship with their arms and stuff in the ship. But anyway...
Something happened there a long time ago.
Yeah, that was... first time they were trying to do a lot of this stealth stuff, I guess. But the time travel thing at Montauk, that when those kids come out with that book, you ought to be able to, that ought to be great.
All right, as soon as we find out, Eddie, thanks. Appreciate that. Yeah, that was a clip, Al Bielek, that Art had interviewed, and I had played it on the April 13th Art Bell Tribute Show. Text and tweets, what do you have for us, Tommy?
In from Carl in Louisiana, he simply asks, is there a difference between a spirit and a ghost?
Yes, I think so. I think a spirit has to do with the soul, and I think a ghost is an apparition that
that you see
that somehow is part of your spirit, but I think it's separate.
I think people, though, kind of visualize them as the same, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think so.
I do. All right, thanks, Tom. Next up, we've got whose turn? Joel in Long Beach, California. Welcome to the program, Joel.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Love it.
Anyway, what happened tonight while I was listening, I was actually listening to your show and then I went to bed. If I were to tell my friends what just happened, I think they would think I'm crazy. I was in bed and I heard gunshots. It sounded like about 5 blocks away. And it was like call and response, like a gunfight. Like, and then
oh, geez.
Back and forth, and it went on for maybe 20 seconds. I guesstimate 20 shots overall, like bang, bam, 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 then back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was asleep. It woke me up, and I thought, okay, am I dreaming? So I forced myself to get up and get out of bed and open the window and stick my head to get the cool air. Oh, no, I'm awake. I saw a group of men. You got to picture the street. I live on a street that only has houses on one side. In front of my house, there's like a drainage control, like a riverbed.
Like a culvert?
Yeah, I guess so. It's a ditch, and then there's like fences, and there's foliage on both sides,
right.
So it's kind of private. And there's a turn-in on the end, which direction I was looking. And the guys that were working on whatever they were searching for, about probably 7 or 8, they looked at me. And I mean, it was clear as a bell, and I'm checking, am I awake or am I sleeping? Am I delusioning?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I got dressed, and I thought, I'm going to, like, walk outside. And I walked outside, and I saw, and then they faded out. And I have experience with seeing across dimensions or something, but that was as real as it's ever been.
Now, what do you think the gunshots were?
Well, I live between Lakewood and Long Beach, and there's a lot of dealers up here.
Oh, so you think that was real, right?
Oh, I know my weapons. I mean, I have a SBL 1895 Marlin. I'm totally trained in all weaponry imaginable. And that was gunshots. A gunshot has a crack to it, like a firecracker or a cherry bomb or those kinds of incendiaries. They have a dullness to them, even if they're loud. But a weapon, 9mm, 45, 357, it has a sharpness to it. And no, they were gunshots.
And it wasn't target practice, was it?
No, but the thing was, they weren't there wasn't anything going on. I've been waiting to see if there's sirens coming into the neighborhood. I checked the news.
Nothing, huh?
Nothing. But again, you know, I've had, you know, experiences like that frequently in the past. But this was the most profound because, I mean, I heard a gunfight. I saw men in front of my house, well, about 70, 80 feet to the left of my window across the street by the fence, which was, the street's a very narrow street, maybe 20 feet wide at the most.
That is strange indeed. Joel, thanks for the story. And those guys that just disappeared, sounds like they came out of some time warp or something like that. Ron in Pennsylvania, take it away, Ronald.
George.
Hi there.
Good morning. Good morning. Oh, my God. God bless your heart. I have a significant story about Art Bell. I have something significant to say about the significance of Coast to Coast AM, and I have a conclusion about this phone call.
Okay.
So, three part. The significant story about Art Bell, I think, and you would have this racked. You could look back. It's not that important. It's important to me. But I think the first time I called, didn't you announce Art Bell's passing in the middle of the night?
I did. That was April 13th of 2018.
And I remember that because I was on the line. Was I the first call, or it doesn't matter? It's, you know, but I was on the line when I heard that. I heard that while waiting, you know, while waiting in queue, you know, for Art Bell. And so that created an extra special bond for me, and I think this is what other callers and listeners need to key into. What is your bond to Coast to Coast? And I can, if I can go into my next point.
Sure.
Okay. George, I don't know if you probably have realized this, and I mean, you have such wonderful co-hosts, and I have to say, I mean, I just talked to Tom Danheiser, but I have to admit that Ian Punnett is, oh my God, he has such intellect too.
Oh, he's a genius.
Oh my God, he's at Kansas State University. So
and funny, let me say one quick thing if I can, because you bring up something interesting.
You're the host. What do you mean? You're the host.
Just today, I sent an email to Lisa Lyon, our executive producer, and Tom, and said, I want to do a show 3 out of the 4 hours with every host on my program. There's six of them. And all six of them responded like within a half hour that said, oh, my God, great idea. Let's do it. So I'm going to do a program in the not-too-distant future where each one of the six hosts that you have heard coming on the show are going to be on for 30 minutes with me, each one.
Talk about the 27 Yankees there at Murderers Row. Boom, 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 boom.
You got it.
All out of the park. So anyway, what I want to say about Coast to Coast, George, is that what you are doing and what Coast to Coast AM is doing, you're keeping alive the fundamental form of communication and human culture, namely the oral tradition.
Yes, you got it.
So it's primordial. And see, I guess the last thing I wanted to say, because I talked to you about this at a previous call, you had somebody talking, you know, including about Child Protective Services, and I've written a 2-volume work that I'm looking to have published on this. Well, after the oral tradition, I mean, you know, that's what we're doing in this pandemic, time span right now. We have to rediscover oral tradition in the human community and the human family. And writing didn't come in until 5 years ago, right? The written word, you know. And so, and that's the other thing that it's keeping me going is writing. You know, the significance of writing in addition to listening to talk radio. And I'm finishing working to get it published now, edited and so forth. A two-volume work on Child Protective Services. And the last time I talked to you, there was a host, and you said, "Yeah, Ron, send me, you know, whatever, send me the email." And it turns out that the PhD, who wrote the foreword to this book, you know, teaches in university. She lives in St. Louis with her, St. Charles with her PhD chemist husband, and she was interested in being a guest on a show about child protective services and the incredible harm and abuse that this agency of government all around the world casts upon families. So anyway, and I'd be glad to renew the email contact with you.
Yeah, please do that, Ron, if you would. You've got the email address, right?
I'll look it up. It's whatever. It's your name.
You'll get it. But bombard me with a couple of them, because I get 1,500 a day, and some of them go through the cracks. So just keep sending it until you get a response from me, if you would. Let me take a few more calls, and we've got a break coming up. But, do that, Ron. Just email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Perry is with us in Lompoc, California. Hey, Perry, welcome.
Thank you so much. And once again, I wanted to thank you for being with us during this really horrible time we're going through here.
It's a rough time for a lot of people, Perry. A lot of people.
And I feel so bad. I really, really do.
But this too shall pass one day.
It will. It will. I also wanted to say something really quick. I was thinking, I'm glad you keep the language clean on your show.
I'm from the old school of broadcasting.
Oh, yeah.
And, there's some things you can say, there's some things you can't. But I like to even go beyond that. You know?
I agree completely with you. It's a family show. And I was taught in Catholic grade school that if you have to use profanity to make a point, you don't really have anything much to say.
I agree with
That's what one of my teachers said. And, back in the school bus, we're growing home, all our friends together, and we always went in the back of the school bus. We didn't use any profanity or anything. Because, we didn't do it during the day. Why would you do it when you get off school and going home on the bus?
Exactly. I know. There's no place for that.
There isn't. And like a lot of these podcasts, though. Some of them are really good, but why do they have to use the F word and the S word?
I know it.
I guess so too. Anyway, real quick about the coronavirus here. This is becoming absurd at this point. I mean, it really is.
And you're really locked down. California is locked down big time, isn't it?
We're completely, yeah. We're completely locked down here. Where you live here, too, we're locked down. And, there were people on the beach the other day, and the Governor Newsom was ready to,
Well, I think that Tommy was telling me they've got mounted police now up and down the beaches.
I didn't know that. Wow.
That's crazy.
This has got to, because, we're already, early May now,
Let people need to build up an immunity, and you can't do it by hiding.
Yeah, and you also can't, because, years ago when we were kids, and I'm sure it was the same when I was a kid, when you were a kid, we played in the dirt.
Oh, my gosh. We did everything. Sometimes our food would fall and we'd pick it up and eat it.
That's right. But you know what my grandmother always said? Pick it up and kiss it,
And that's the way to do it. Perry, I got a break coming up. I've got to run, but we're going to come back in a moment and talk a little bit about Bigfoot right here on Coast to Coast AM. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and pick up our free YouTube channel, Coast to Coast AM Official. What the heck is Bigfoot? Man, animal, some believe it's half of each. Whatever it is, Bigfoot expert Timothy Renner just might know the answer. Timothy, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be back, George.
So how is the Bigfoot collection coming along?
It's never ending. I started with Pennsylvania, and I've moved on to the West Coast, and I'm going to go ahead and try to do the whole country as time allows.
Do these reports come to you, or do you have to go find them? How do they come?
I spend a lot of time researching, a lot of microfilm research, a lot of newspaper archive research.
Tim, what have you concluded about this creature or whatever it might be?
It's very strange. I don't think it's a natural animal. I don't think it's a natural gorilla. But that said, I don't know what it is, and I do believe it's something real. It's something that leaves footprints and hair behind. But it's very strange. We can't seem to get a really good, clear picture of it. They don't show up on trail cams. They seem to know what trail cams are. It's just a very, very strange thing that... my answer is, I say it's unsexy. My very unsexy answer is, I don't know, but I'm completely fascinated, and it's not going to stop me from looking into them.
You have not ruled out a dimensional or extraterrestrial either, have you?
I don't think we can at this point. We just don't know enough, and there's so much strangeness that surrounds these creatures. I mean, we can't say they're being dropped off in UFOs, but we can say certainly whatever conditions that seem favorable for Bigfoot also seem favorable for mystery lights, because these mystery lights are seen in the same places around the same time very often.
What got you involved in this, Timothy?
Well, my first book, I turned up, that was more of a local thing, Beyond the Seventh Gate, my first book, and I turned up a lot of Bigfoot reports locally, more than I ever thought I would. So I started, that got me interested, and I thought, well, I'm going to dig in and see what I can find for the whole state of Pennsylvania, and I found so many for the whole state that I thought, well, I'm going to, you know, I'll see what I can find for other areas. So I'm really, really fascinated in it, because it seems whatever they're describing, that the behavior is, that's the most exciting thing for me, because it seems that modern witnesses are describing the same behaviors that they were describing in the 1800s.
Now, the 1800 reports, they didn't call them Bigfoot or Sasquatch. What did they call these creatures?
Most often it was wild men. That's what you'll find most often. Until the late 1800s, right around 1890, the turn of the century, 1900, they start calling them gorillas. You see a definite shift in the article from before they were called wild men, they start calling them gorillas. The reason for this is the discovery of the mountain gorilla. And most people didn't know what a gorilla was until the late 1800s. Then they start seeing them in pictures, and they start hearing stories of mountain gorillas and so forth. So now they have a name to put to something that's upright and covered in hair and walks like a man but isn't a man. So they call it a gorilla at that point. But before then, they'll call it a wild man. Anything, that's the most common name. Sometimes you get hairy giants or monkey man or something like that, but the most frequently used name is wild man.
Well, and that tells me that most of the sightings... they thought that they could have been some kind of out-of-control human being. You know, when you say wild man, you haven't attached an animal name to it at all. So they probably thought it was human.
I think it was a matter of just having a name to put on something. They saw something that walked upright like a man that was covered in hair. And, you know, this is right around the time of Darwin. And there's a lot of confusion in the articles. There's a lot of ideas in these old articles that if someone walks away from society, they will turn wild and grow hair all over their body. It's a very strange kind of misinterpretation of the idea of Darwinism, I believe.
But they didn't call this wild bear or anything like that.
No. It's most often it's wild man. But, you know, when they're describing one that's, you know, 7 foot tall and its arms, you know, reach down below his knees, and it's covered in hair all over, you can kind of pretty much say, well, it probably wasn't a person.
Were some of the reports so startling for you as you came across them that, you know, you thought, you know, maybe there's something to this, and two, these might not be friendly creatures?
Yeah, these, and I believe this applies today, too. These creatures will eat your pets. I mean, they eat pets on the regular, I believe. And occasionally, I think they take humans. And I don't know whether it's you just get a bad one, you know, in the mix, like a bad person here and there, or what the actual reason is. But I believe to this day, every now and then, some of these missing people might be attributed to these creatures.
Can you cite one of the older stories from the past and kind of give us a little glimpse into what it was like?
Sure. Let's see. My favorite story is it's a gorilla account. Now, this comes from Pennsylvania. It's the Altoona Tribune, 1920. And there was a whole series of gorilla sightings. Now, they're seeing gorillas in the winter. This is December. These sightings go throughout the winter of 1920 and into the summer. You can basically trace this creature or creatures, it might have been more than one, as they make their way across the state. It's very interesting. But this is the account of Samuel Bolig. So I'll read a little excerpt.
All right, and he was the witness?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Samuel and Margaret Bolig, the children of Charles Bolig, were gathering kindling wood one night in November with the light of a search lamp when a huge animal, about 7 feet tall and that stood up like a man, was discovered by the children within the circle of light. It looked to them like a huge monkey, and when discovered, dropped on all fours and ambled away, soon disappearing in the darkness. A week later, the same animal was discovered in a cornfield on a Bolig farm, which is at the foot of the mountain. Samuel procured a .32 caliber rifle and took a shot at the huge man creature, evidently wounding it as it fell at the shot, rolling over several times on the ground. The boy and his father trailed the wounded ape some distance by the blood, but were unable to overtake it, and at length gave up pursuit. On Monday night of the present week, the strange creature made its third appearance on the Bolig farm. Charles Bolig was engaged in chopping wood by the light of a lantern when the ape approached near enough to be seen. The son ran to the house and procured a rifle, but before he could shoot the gorilla, it viciously attacked him, knocking him down and breaking his arm, and was finally driven away by the father. The lad lay on the ground in an unconscious condition. He was taken to the house and soon recovered his senses, and it was found that he was not seriously injured. He suffered much from shock, but is expected to be fully recovered in a short time. So that's one of these accounts that demonstrates so much of the behavior that we see in these creatures in modern reports. A lot of people who take shots at them, they will follow them back home, and they will wait until they have an opportunity, and that's when a lot of these attacks occur.
Clearly, there's something to this, Timothy.
I believe there is, yeah. Like I said, it's the descriptions of the creatures and the descriptions of the behavior that are the same throughout time.
Now, there are a lot of reports of Northwest Bigfoot sightings, of course, and you, of course, highlighted one of your books called Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. Were there many stories there?
Yeah, I found more in Pennsylvania, which was really surprising, than in the West Coast. I thought, you know, going into it, surely I'll find more in,
you would think, Washington
State and so forth. But I found quite a few more in Pennsylvania.
Why do you think that's the case?
I think it comes down to population and the amount of newspapers. We had a larger population in Pennsylvania in the 1800s to see the creatures, and we had a lot more newspapers. This is, you know, Ben Franklin started one of the first newspapers in the country here, and the first printing press in the country was in Pennsylvania. So we have a very strong history of newspapers here. So I believe it just comes down to that.
Timothy, at any given time, there are 90,000 people missing in the United States, simply missing. Now, we have a guest that comes on, David Politis, who has written extensive books and research on these missing people. But in his particular case, he's more concerned about strange disappearances where they're in federal parks, for example, and you know, parents will turn around and their child is gone, just missing, with no sound. You know, if it was an animal that came sweeping down from the hills to grab the kid, you'd hear the animal making noise and the kid screaming. There's nothing like that. But in this case, 90,000 Americans are missing on any given year. Who's to say that these Bigfoot creatures aren't grabbing people?
Well, yeah. I think there's evidence here and there that they could have been or could still be. I collected one report. I'm very familiar with David Pilates' work. I have quite a selection of his books.
Okay. He's a great researcher.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very much respect Mr. Pilates. And I found one report from 1888 that reads like it could have come out of one of David's books. And this is the case of Florence Hughes. And she was a two-year-old girl. She was being watched by her siblings. Two other siblings, they turned their back to gather some flowers, and she disappeared.
Jeez.
Now, they said all day long, a fruitless search was kept up. It was a searching party of over 100 people that started almost right away. So every nook and spot in the fields within a radius of 1 mile was examined closely. So very quickly after they realized she was missing, they had 100 people searching. Later that night, they had 200 men out with torches and lanterns, scouring the woods all evening. And the one note in this article, it is said, that people were worried because it is thought that she may have been carried away by the wild man who was seen by several in this locality recently. And then, just like in the reports David collects, as the night goes on, a heavy fog rolls in and they have to abandon the search.
That's scary stuff, Tim, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a disturbing amount of reports that I have another sort of almost abduction where a female creature picked up a little girl and started running away with her, and they people chased her down, and she dropped the child before she got away.
Jeez. Now, is the child screaming at all?
Yeah, that article notes that the mother saw her pick her up. The child, the mother, and the creature, I think, were all screaming. They make note and eventually dropped the child, though, before it made off with it. There's other instances where the creatures will beckon to children. They'll come. I have one in the West Coast book. It throws a stone first, which is another noted Bigfoot behavior, to get the kid's attention. The kid looks up and said the creature was beckoning to him. That child, the mother saw, I believe, and ran out and got the kid in the house.
Do we think the creature does harm to the child or the individual they pick up, or are they just keeping them?
It's hard to say. I have a good friend who's a researcher, and he thinks that it's some sort of breeding program. I don't know. That sounds outrageous to me.
Yeah, that's a little far-fetched, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing seems, you know, a little outrageous, I guess. We're talking about 8-foot-tall, you know, hairy creatures that run around the woods. But to me, I think it's probably more curiosity that we look like them. You know, we walk on two legs, as they do. They see us, and maybe it's something like that. They're just grabbing it out of curiosity, and then unfortunately, I think a lot of people end up dying after they get taken.
There was a report once of a family of Bigfoot throwing rocks against the side of a house, and the lady came out and she, you know, basically chased them away. Have there been reports that these creatures have broken into homes directly?
Yes, I've collected one from the Oakland Tribune from 1920. And it says, burglar looks like a huge ape. So it's the shaggy orangutan in Poe's Murders in the Rue Morgue could have been no more horrifying in appearance than the man or beast who at 3 o'clock on a recent morning invaded the bedroom of two small girls in Long Beach. The tiny daughters of H.H. Thompson were asleep in their room when they were awakened by a man in the room. They screamed and huddled under the bedclothes in fear. The father heard the screams and rushed into the room just in time to see the most gorilla-like man he'd ever seen climbing out of the window. Before the girl's father could reach the window, the man had dropped to the ground and escaped. Thompson, now this is the father, Thompson says the man's head and face were so covered with long black shaggy hair that, along with his immense size and ferocious stoop, he in every way resembled a large ape. So that's, to me, that's not the little girls calling him an ape. You know, that's the father who came
right
in the room who described him.
Jeez. And do they damage the house, or do they seem to know what they're doing?
In most cases, they don't come in, and this applies to modern reports and old reports. They'll jiggle handles, they'll knock on windows. And again, it's one of the very strange things to do with these creatures, because certainly they're immense enough where they could, you know, basically bust through any door. They could tear off any door they wanted to. But they seem to somehow not come in structures for some reason. Now, in this case, they don't know whether the window was open already. You know, there's no information as to what state the window was in. So I don't know whether the creature encountered an open window and thought, well, I'm coming in, or what.
We're with Timothy Renner. Timothy, 1888, Dead Man's Hole in California. Tell me more.
Oh, that's a scary one. Now, this, I think, points to at least this creature was eating people.
Eating people?
That's what it seems
like.
Oh,
God. What happened?
So this is Dead Man's Hole. It's an isolated hollow in northern San Diego County. It was a stagecoach stop at the time in 1888.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind. before I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan DeGalanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. I'll be on Sunday. Until then, be safe, everyone.